Is that
Okay.
the full screen? Everything. Okay.
Okay. So I'm gonna discuss maybe a little bit of the lumdus from the Machlokes Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua in Sukkos, which repeats itself a few times in a variety of different contexts, and talk about some of the halacha lemaisa that emerges, believe it or not, from the lumdus, including in some contemporary situations. So the Mishnah Yud Beis brings some machlokes between Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Yehoshua, Nosi Yisisho, Matzla Besulim, Yomeres Mishar Study Neinasti, Vistach Vasadeo. She says that she was Nansa from the time of Veresin, and therefore it was not a Mekachtos, and therefore she still has to pay her the Ksuva. And he says, no, this happened to you that you don't have Besulim. This happened to you that you had Bia and therefore became a Be'ula before the moment of Erisin, and therefore it's a Mechachtos. You weren't a Besula, you were a Be'ula. So we have Machlokes, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Gamliel says that she's Nemenes. Rabbi Yehoshua says that Lo Mipia Nuchayim, that she doesn't have Nermanus, and they argue in the next Mishnah, Yugimel and Aleph, she says Mukas Eitzani, and he says No Drusa Sishat, that you're a Be'ula, and there as well, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yezer say that she's Nermanus, and Rabbi Yehoshua says that Lomi Pia Nuchayim, that she's not Nermanus. The halacha follows Rabban Gamliel, but there's a discussion in the Gemara on what basis Rabban Gamliel seems to articulate his view. The two different lashonos, on Yud Beis, on the base, whether this is mitam, at least in the first case, mitam a amigo that he could have, she could have said mukaseitzani, she could have had a better taina for which she wouldn't necessarily have an amonis question as to whether such a migo is really a good migo, or whether it's a tainas bari at Rabban Gamliel with some sort of a tziruf of cheskas aguf and tainas bari holds that in such a case a chazaka can't be good enough to be motzi mama. So the Gemara, much later on, Ayin Hamid base asked the question from a different Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about where a woman ends up having mumin. That her husband went into the marriage with the expectation that she wouldn't have mumin, she wouldn't have blemishes, and then she ends up having mumin. And it's a question as to whether the mumin occurred mishnis arsa, that after the erison took place, in which case again it's nistach basadeo, that she was perfectly fine, she had a perfectly unblemished goof, like we assume most people do at the time of Erisin, or whether she had the mumin kodim of Erisin, in which case she would be it would be a mekachtos that the husband wouldn't be obligated to give her anything. And the Mishnah here says, well, you know what, it depends. If she's Beves Avia, if she's still in her father's home, between the Erisin and the Misu and Apipashtus, she's still in her father's home, so then the father has to bring a raya that she's entitled to something. And we don't necessarily believe the Taina that it only happened after Erisin. But if she's in the husband, she's Beves Abao, she's in the husband's home, so then, good, fine. We go to the normal din, that the woman has nemanus, that it only happened afterwards, and the husband would be responsible to pay her the ksuba, unless the husband could prove that she had the mumin prior to Erisin. So the Gemara asked the Kasha that it seems like the Reisha is going according to Rabbi Yehoshua, then the Sefer is, only the Sefer is going according to Rabban Gamliel, so can we please make up our minds here? So Rabbi Elazar says, no, we can't make up our minds, that first the Mishnah stated the din according to Rabbi Yehoshua, and then the Mishnah stated the din according to Rambam Gamliel. And we have two other terutzim within Rambam Gamliel, assuming that the entire Mishnah is going like Rambam Gamliel. One teretz is the teretz of Rabba. Rabba says that kanimtsu kanhoyu, that we apply a principle of kanimtsu kanhoyu, that wherever she was, we assume that it was in that rishus that this took place. When she's in her father's rishus, so we assume that the woman must have arisen kodem erisin, and she's already in her husband's rishus, so it must have happened in his rishus, and therefore it happened after erisin, and therefore she's entitled to her money. And Rabashi says that it really depends who's making the tainer. If the woman's making the tainer, so she has nemanus, but in the reisha, it's not the woman who's making the tainer, it's the father who's making the tainer, that the reisha is manu abibiyotcha, b'seipa mane li biyotcha. And that seems to be the sugya. So Rashi mentions in passing, almost like it just follows Mimela, shouldn't disturb your day too much, but he says okay, so if we're going to now go back and apply what we've just learned in Perek Shvi of Ksuvos to what we think we understood in the first Perek of Ksuvos, is Perek Hamanami, no problem. If you look at Rabba's teretz of Kanimtsu Kanhoyu, that we go after whatever shus she's in, so there too we have to understand that Tuktayu, the Machlokis, Rambam Gamliel, and Rabbi Yeshua, is Vikneknesa, the Rishu Sabalhi, is after she's already in her husband's domain, after the actual Nisuin, that's when all this whole Machlokis is taking place. It's only taking place after Nisuin. Guess what? It wasn't taking place after Erisin after all. Uvarba Rambam Gamliel, and Dohura Cheskasavia Vikach, and that's under those circumstances that Rambam Gamliel says, that she would be Ne'emenis, and that she would be able to collect the Ksuba Mistama. You have to say the same thing with respect to Ravashi, that it's only when she's a Bishu Sabal that she's making this claim, and therefore according to Bote Rutsim, it sounds like she's only making it when she's a Bishu Sabal. And the Tosfos in Dibor Masla Reisha Kanimtsu Kanhoyu, the bottom of Dala of Dafa in Hayam Beis, says the same thing. So it's the same thing. So it seems that both Rashi and Tosfos seem to understand that her taina mishevastani and nasti is kind of like mishkanastani and nasti, or at least she's making the taina when she's in the Rishus HaBaal la'achar nisuin, and that's when Rambam Gamliel holds that she has ne'emanus. So the Sheir Shmaitis asks the question, it's a theme of second Shmaitis. He asks the question if we assume that this is, according to Rashi and Tosos, that this is the understanding of the Shita of Rambam Gamliel, so then once she's actually in the Rishus of her husband, it doesn't seem that we would need any further Tainus Bari or anything of that sort. It's really just a question of allocating the Chazakos. In fact, the Gemara indicates as much in Daf Ayin Vav and Beis, which based on this Mishnah here regarding the woman's Ne'emanus after she's in her husband's home. So the Gemara says that this is a proof for the case of Machat Shinimtseis Buvi Beis Hakosos, that if you have a sale that takes place with a somebody sells an animal to a butcher, to a tavach, and it turns out that the animal is a trefa, but we don't know if the animal was a trefa prior to the sale, or whether the animal only became a trefa la'achar the sale. So then the halacha is that the tavach, even if he has not yet paid his damim, even if he has not yet paid the money, we say that the case is recorded, we paid the money because normally he would pay the money, but even if he has not yet paid the money, alav haraya, he has the proof, he has the achrayas, he has the burden of proving that the trefas took place before the sale. And otherwise we assume, despite the fact that this is a case of motzi mamon, but despite the fact that this is mamish, a case of motzi mamon, we would say that there is the assumption that ein machzikim reyusim reshus the reshus, once it's already passed into his possession, that we don't assume that the reyusa, that the animal was a trefa, occurred when it was in the prior possession of the seller, but rather when it occurred when it was already in his possession, unless he can prove otherwise, and therefore he's obligated to pay the money. So have the same ramification in the case that's mentioned on the bottom of Ayin Vav and Aleph, with respect to Hamachlif Para Bachamor, that the Baal Bachamor is Moshech the Para, and therefore it's already in, when he does that, then the Baal HaPara already has the Chamor in his possession, but it turns out that the Chamor is dead, so the Baal HaPara has to bring a Raya that the Chamor was already dead at the time of the sale, and then it's a Mekal Tos, but otherwise we assume that the Chamor died after the sale, and it's the Ramav brings that in Simen Choshen Mishpat, Simen Reish Mem Dalet, that this would also flow from the halacha of Rami Bayecheskel. These are cases where nobody is Pipasha is bringing a Tainus Bari that they know exactly what happened, but we don't know what happened, so we say that we simply assume that there was no reusa, that there was no problem when it was until it came into the current reshus, and since we didn't know about any problem in the prior reshus, so the problem must have arisen in the current reshus, and that chazaka is sufficient even to be motzi mamon. Well, ask the Sheish Maimon, so if that chazaka is sufficient even to be motzi mamon, and we understand that the case that Rabbi Gamliel is talking about, such a chazaka, in the case of Misher Stadin and Asti, so why then does the Gemara on Yud Beis, Amud Beis, indicate that the whole thing is working only mitainas bari, or mitainas migo, and the Gemara on at the beginning of the second parak of Ksuvos, it deals with the Isha Shinis Amalo and Isgarsha. She says that I was married as a Basula. He says, no, you were married as an Amana, and therefore you're only entitled to Amana. And the Gemara there indicates that she kind of has to prove her claim. And the Gemara says, why isn't this similar to the case of Rami Gamliel? So the Gemara says, no, the case, the Shita of Rami Gamliel is only Bibari Vishema, and this is a case of Bari Bibari, and therefore the Halacha of Rami Gamliel is not applicable. He says, why do I need Bari altogether? The Halacha of Rami Gamliel has nothing to do with Bari when we're dealing with with his case, since she was already Bibay Sabah. I'm not Maxik Reusa and Mereshus Lereshus. So eventually the Sheish Maimon gives an answer to this question. We're going to focus in just a moment on what he says before he gives the answer to this question. Before he gives the answer to this question, he says, "Don't think that the answer to this question is that our premise is incorrect. Our premise is 100% correct. You wouldn't need any kind of a Titus Bari or anything else if we were just dealing with a situation of when she's Nefesah the Rishu Sabah. That's the Maskan of the Sugya, that's the way that we Paskin, no problem there. But in terms of just dealing with the Gemara, why does the Gemara need all these Baris?" So he gives an answer. He says, well, for the Sugya on tests at the beginning of the second parak, when we're invoking Rami Gamliel, we're not necessarily invoking Rami Gamliel in the case of Misher Estayin and Asti. We're invoking Rami Gamliel in the case of the dispute where she says Mukas Eitz Isi, and he's saying that Drusa Se Ishat, where there's no whatever happened before she, even according to her claim, she's saying that she went into the marriage with her Besula messed up. But she's just saying that it didn't happen as a drusasish, it happened as a mukasish. So this isn't a question of being maksik v'shuyas, this is a question of acheskas aguf. Acheskas aguf is not going to be strong enough to be motzi mamon unless you also throw in a bari. So that's the case that we're talking about. As far as the case on Yud Beis, Amud Beis, so there it takes him a couple of extra problems to get to the answer. But in Parakhes of Shmaitis Abbas, he gives the answer that it's talking about a case, if you look at the Pashtas of the Lashon and the Mishnah says, Misher Astani Ne'anasti. It doesn't say, Misher Kanastani Ne'anasti. So he says, there's such a taina, even the way that we're understanding the Sugya according to Rashi and Tosfos and Daf Ayin Hem Beis, there is such a taina that she can say, Misher Astani Ne'anasti, If she's claiming that it was in the Erisin, so then once she's making that type of a claim, we no longer can say that the Chazaka is that it only happened to Rishus HaBaal, because she herself is saying that it didn't happen to Rishus HaBaal, but she's Nemanes Bemigo. What's the Migo? He's saying that the Yikar Tam, then, the Gemara gives two Svaris within Rama Gamliel, one is Bari and one is Migo. He's saying that the Yikar Tam is the Tam of Migo, the Migo that she would be believed when she says Mishnah Astani Aristotle, because she could have said Mishnah Astani Aristotle. And had she said Mishnah Astani Aristotle, then we wouldn't be Motzir Yusuf Rishus Lishus, and she would be completely believed, and therefore, since that would be Taina Linta, not only be a Migo like Migo Mukasetz Hayisi, but it would be a Migo that itself would have self-standing Namanus, not just a better Taina, but a Taina that would have self-standing Namanus, so that, according to Rabba holds, the Sheikh Shemayus posits, that whenever you have a Migo that's going to work, it has to have a self-standing Namanus, so therefore this is an even better Migo. That's how he'll understand the Migo, and that's why you need a Migo in that case, because of the fact that she started out saying not Mishkan Astani Nanasti, but rather Mishkan Astani Nanasti. But in terms of this basic principle of Rava, so the Sheikh Shemaitis says that we learn, this is, you know, presents a little bit of a problem, because generally speaking, if you have any kind of chazaka, say it's a chazaka that she must be telling truth because she's in the Rishus already, the Baal, so she had the cheskas, call it a cheskas agupa limta, the time that she entered into the Baal's domain, that we didn't know any problems with respect to her. Generally speaking, we're not motzi mamon al pi chazaka levad. So he quotes the Pnei Yoshua and Apiyah Beis Amud Beis. It's Kuntras Acharon. There's a bechiddush. He restates this chiddush in a couple of places. He bases it truthfully on a shitas hari that appears a couple of places in the Masechta. It's not spelled out in as much detail. It's just kind of like a matter of fact. In fact, in these cases, even if there would be no Tainus Bari whatsoever, we are Motzi Mammon. And he says the reason why is because even though we're not Motzi Mammon Api Rov, and we know the Rov of Chazaka, Ruba Adip, is the Mammon of Abbas, indicates nonetheless, that's only when I have a Rov versus a Chazaka. But if I have a Chazaka, it's a standalone Chazaka, so a standalone Chazaka is stronger than a standalone Rov. Standalone Rov. If I have a standalone Chazaka that's not contradicted by a Rov, so in such a case, then you can actually be motzi mamon api chazaka. So even without a Pnei Yoshua, tainus that even without a tainus bari, the indication that you need a tainus bari, he reinterprets in the Gemara that's lapuke. It means just that even if there's that it means that all cases tainus shema tainus bari would be fine so long as the husband himself does not assert a Tainus Bari. If the husband himself asserts a Tainus Bari, that would be a problem. The fact that she would be asserting a Tainus Bari is lav dafka. That's the way he interprets it. So the Sheikh Shemaitis says, no, I don't think that's the right interpretation. I've got to tell you a big chiddush. And the chiddush that I'll read inside, the Sheikh Shemaitis says, is that it seems to him, Benira, time of the hachmilsa, that the way that this is really working is, that the truth of the matter is, if I have no reyusa whatsoever, and I'm dealing with a regular situation, call it chazaka, rov, they makam listapik, and I don't have any reyusa, I don't have a leidas hasafik that there would otherwise be a problem. So vaday lo naktina lesveka. If, for example, in the prior reshus, there was never, like when this animal that was sold was in the Baal Bais's reshus, there was never a question that this animal might be a trepa, and only now I'm asking the question. So I say there was no question, there was no suffix at the point in time of sale. At the point in time of sale that Robemus of Becheskos Ksheros, that was considered to be like a vados. I'm not going bust a rope, since there was no made that something, there was no reuse at that point in time. It was a vados that the animal, unless you could prove me otherwise to me, but otherwise it's considered to be a vados that the animal was kosher, and therefore if the tevach or the tavach who buys the animal and discovers a trapus, again, this is a type of trefus, or the Rashba writes in Kulin Daf Yud Aleph, it can't be a type of trefus that is 100% clear that you know it must have happened a year ago, but a trefus that could have happened the last possible moment. So then I say that I'm not going to be Maksik Reus to the Rishus to Rishus, and I'm going to assume that it was perfectly kosher. Could go. He gives the example. We go in Tarak Shalaka Pema, Benavda, Vitovea Moke or Domim, Vadai Lamati Lokak Tarna Ema Trepa Haisa. Pie in the sky. Say, oh, maybe it was a trepa at that time, at that point in time, right? So this case we don't even have to discuss. This is not the case of Basakosis. This is a more posher case. A case where the animal was Mamish Nevda. An animal that cheskas a group of being ksheva, and the animal was nevda, so for sure you wouldn't be able to make that to make that tiny. No, you can't say that. There's no makom reyusa, therefore, of course, you don't worry about a spekas. And that which we don't go the mamam akarov, the suffik of penenim yishma the suffik. That's only when I have a suffik in front of me, and when, you know, at the defining moment in which we're going to define liability or responsibility, I have a suffik in front of me at that moment in time, v'yesh b'ma lehis topic. V'imkein, v'machat shenim tzei reyus l'penenim, so the case in Ayin Vavim and Beis, and the machat that's found in the Beis HaKosos, shigoyim a suffik l'ma ema trepa haisam mikodim, now I'm going to say, or maybe it was a trepa at the time of sale, so we say with respect to this that we have to look at whether there was, when did the suffix occur? Was there a suffix when it was in the possession of the seller or only afterwards? Since I'm not going to cast aspersions on whatever happened in the previous reshus, that's why Lokeach is obligated to sell to the Mocher. So he says two things. Number one, if I don't have a Leidas Hasafik at all, so then Vazai, I'm going to go after the Rov, and it's going to be good even to be Motzi Momon. Like for example, the case where you buy behemoth nevda. So I don't have a reyusa ever because I never saw that there was trapus of the animal. Secondly, if I do have a reyusa, I do discover that there's trapus of the animal. So then that's then the determining factor is going to be in what reshus did that happen? That happened in the reshus of the mocher. If so, then or can it be presumed that it occurred in the reshus of the mocher? So he has a problem. But if I don't have reason to assume that it occurred in the Rishus of the Mocher, that it could have occurred at the last possible moment, as the Rashba writes in Kulin Daf Yud Aleph, so then I would say that it occurred presumptively in the Rishus of the Lokeach, and he has to bring a Raya, and so too. And the Rashba says it's the Perish in his Perish to Kulin over there, so too in the case of the Kala. So to the case of this woman with a mumin, the case in Perek HaMadir, that if she's already Pershus Habal, since the only time that the Reusa arose was after she was already in his Reshus, so we don't assume that the Reusa arose when she was in the previous Reshus, unless we're talking about the case that the Gemara says she has an extra finger. So if she has a Yoseris, she has an extra finger, so we know that that didn't suddenly sprout up overnight. That's something that presumably you're born with. But other than that, we'll assume that it occurred at the last possible moment. So one of the, jumping ahead a little bit to the 21st century, so one of the questions that arose in trying to resolve the World Trade Center Luna cases was how to place a missing husband, in the building in a place where had he been at the time that the planes collided into the building, he definitely would have been killed because he was in a location in the building where there would have been no possible escape other than death. Like, for example, in the North Tower of the World Trade Center, the plane hit the North Tower in approximately the 92nd, 93rd floor area of the tower, and it hit it in such a way it was a straight hit where it completely severed all of the connections from the upper part of the building from the lower part of the building, and all elevators and all staircases were completely wiped out at the time of collision. And anybody who was above the 92nd floor did not survive, because either they would fall to their deaths tragically, or they would have been killed through the smoke inhalation, or the collision itself, if they had been standing in a place where the plane just, you know, would have collided into them and let forth the gasoline right to where they were standing. And therefore, it's like the Gemara Yavama says that as long as you have reliable evidence, testimony that the person was there at that time and they couldn't possibly have escaped, that would be enough sufficient for Matir and the Isha to remarry. So, for the most part, testimony was collected. I was involved myself in speaking to some of the individuals. Testimony was collected from people who made phone calls, for example, to the husbands who had been trapped there, either the wives or business acquaintances, saying, oh, we heard something just happened to your building. And the person would say, yes, I know, we're trying to escape, we're trying to get out. Where it was clear from the telephone conversation itself that the person was there in their office in a location where they could not possibly have escaped, whether they realized it or not, at the time of the telephone conversation. What if it was the person could be placed in the building because of the fact that somebody spoke to the person or had an exchange with the person that morning, but it occurred prior to the point of collision? So we know that they were in a location where they couldn't possibly have survived, but we only know that they were in that location 5 minutes beforehand or a half hour beforehand. So in truth, we didn't really, I was involved in the handling of the Beis Din of America of these cases. We didn't really have any cases like that because all of the cases that we had of individuals who were above the 92nd floor, I mean, there was one case where we had a more difficult case because we didn't know that the person was there in their office altogether, because there was no evidence that they actually even made it to their office. We just had the subway records and the train records that they were on their way to the office. But in all the, and that had to be resolved through other means and other arguments, including DNA. But in the cases that, the other cases we dealt with, all of the telephone conversations that took place between the wives or business acquaintances and the people who were trapped in their offices took place after the point of collision. So therefore, there's nothing to discuss. The Lakewood Beis Din dealt with a case where there was an individual who was at work who was involved in various business transactions. He was actually trying to finalize a transaction just a few minutes before the point of the time of the collision. He worked on the 104th floor at the offices of Cantor Fitzgerald. That was the last evidence that anybody had that he was there. And the question is, can you therefore assume, kind of like a kanimsa kanhoya kanhoya kanimsa type of equation, that since the person was there beforehand, therefore they remained a bimkomo? Or do you say that you have to be worried that maybe they decided to go outside to get a breath of fresh air, to buy a coffee, to meet an acquaintance, that maybe they left prior to the point of collision? So when we sent our shaylos to Zalman Chaim Goldberg, Zalman Chaim Goldberg actually, even in the context of one of our cases, said, well, maybe the phone conversation is not completely reliable. He got the impression that maybe there was a suffix that it couldn't be, it wasn't entirely clear in one of the cases, that when the fellow spoke to his wife and was talking about how the building was just hit, that he was really in his office. Maybe he was in the lobby when he had that conversation. Maybe it wasn't 100% clear, and therefore he was done on this shaila. And then Rabbi Willig responded to him afterwards. This is all in the Kol Tzvi on Yevamos, I think Chayla Dalit or something like that, Rabbi's Dalit. And Rabbi Willig responded to him saying, no, it really was clear from the telephone conversation that he was at his desk. We're not really worried about this issue. But since the Lakewood Beis Din was also interested in this issue, so they looked at Zalman Chaim Goldberg's tshuva because they needed to apply it to their circumstance to figure out, you know, how one would deal with this case. So Zalman Chaim Goldberg said, you know what, I think that you can assume that he remained in the same location. And the reason why I say this is based on the Shev Shmaitasa, that the Shev Shmaitasa articulates a principle that if there is no reusa, we assume that whatever Chazaka was previously present remains the case. And if the person remained in this location, you know, there's a reusa, he said, with respect to the cheskas chai of this individual. There's a reusa with respect to the cheskas eishes ish of his wife. But there's no reusa about that he left his makom. There's no question that arose, any, you know, leidas hasafek, that he didn't remain in exactly the same location where he had been. And just like we have cases of somebody who's a shalach leget l'medina sayam, that we don't worry that he died in the interim, but we deliver the get, assuming that he's still there. Just like if a person has a basket of peros that they're being mafish tumas upon, we don't assume that that basket of peros disappeared. We're allowed to rely upon the assumption that just like he left it there, therefore it remains in place. So too, Tainid of Razam Nechemya Goldberg, that we should apply the same principle that this fellow, when he was, since we know that he was in his office a few minutes before the attack, that he would have remained in his office even at the time of the attack. He says, oh, you'll ask me Akasha, that the Noda Biuda in Ebenezer Simon Membab talks about a case of a person who was on, I don't know, some sort of a crucifix, and somebody saw that he was there dying a slow death, that we don't allow that person to testify that the person definitely died because maybe someone removed him from there. So he only was matir if the aide came back a few days later and saw that there was a dead person on the crucifix, even though he couldn't necessarily identify that it was this individual. Nonetheless, that was enough of a tzirup to be makel about. And why don't we just say, though, that even if he didn't come back, that the assumption is that he wouldn't have left. He would have stayed there. And it's known that if you stay there for a certain number of days, eventually you die. So Zalman Nechemya answered, well, maybe that case is different, because, first of all, it takes a certain amount of time until he would die. Who knows how long that would be? And number two, that there is a built-in reyusa, that if you're impaled somewhere, you're going to try to escape. So you're going to, you know, make whatever efforts that you can potentially make in order to, you know, get down. Maybe you'll try to bribe somebody or, you know, whatever it is. But you're going to try your best to get out while here, at least before the point in which the plane collided into the building. There's no reason to assume that a person would try to get out of his office. I mean, yeah, sure, everybody, you know, tries to get out of their job and win the lottery or whatever. But, you know, you're not going to, at the spur of the moment, try to get out of your office. And therefore, he felt that there was a very strong argument that just like this would be a strong enough chazakah, according to the Sheish Maimsa, to rely upon for purposes of being motzi mamon, so it would be a strong enough argument for purposes of being matir and aguna in this type of case as well. So Rabbi Eliyahu Levin, who is the Rosh Kolel of the Choshen Mishpat Kolel in Lakewood, in Ilu Yatsum, he was dealing with the case that the Lakewood Bezdin was dealing with, of the fellow who Mamish had just completed. He had just completed a transaction in the sense that he had put through an offer of a transaction to somebody on the other end, and he was waiting for the other person to complete the transaction. But it was prior to the point of the collision into the building. And
this case,
yes,
is different than the case that you had before you, because again,
the case that we had before us, the fellow Mamish was on the telephone with his wife. We have three cases. In each of the cases, the fellow spoke to somebody after the point of collision and told that person, here I am in my office after the point of collision. Here, they only knew that the person was in his office prior to the point of collision. And they placed that there was even time tickers because he had been in correspondence with another person, and they were even able to tag the exact time. I think that the plane was hit at 8:46. Or 8:47, the building was hit at 8:46 or 8:47, and this conversation took place at 8:43 or 8:44.
And he was on the 100th.
And he was on the 104th floor,
and
right.
And through an elevator, he could have gone down.
Well, there's
reason to assume he could have gone down.
They made a lot of cheshbonos about the timetable of the elevators, how long it typically took for the elevators to come up.
But the assumption is that he could have gone down.
The mice say, had the elevator Mamish been there, at that exact moment in time, he had decided right after he hung up the phone to go right down, if the elevator was there, and by some miracle it didn't make any local stops on its way down, because typically it would make local stops and it would go straight down to the 78th floor. So then there's some very remote, teensy tiny possibility that had he left at exactly that moment in time, he could have made it down to the express elevator bank on the 78th floor.
So do you even need to come to Kazakas if that was really the case?
So in the end, Rabbi Levin, jumping the gun a little bit, but Rabbi Levin decided that that was a much better argument, and he wrote a tshuva which is published in Yeshurun. There are two volumes of the Yeshurun journal that deal with some of this correspondence. One is volume Yud Aleph, One is volume Yud Beis. So he wrote two tshuvos. One, in the end, their case became much easier because they made a DNA identification. So he wrote one tshuva as to why you should be able to rely on DNA identification. But then he wrote the separate tshuva about how even after their, or prior to the point in which they knew that there was DNA identification, there was room to be megal, and he relied upon all kinds of robes, that there's a robe that the elevator wasn't there, a robe that the elevator usually takes a long time to get there, a robe that Chazak HaShiach Oseh Shlichuso, and he just began a transaction, and no responsible person, you know, who works for a major brokerage house would leave in the middle of trying to finalize a transaction. And but based on all of those other combinations of chazakos and many, many ropes, he felt that that was a stronger argument to be sumach upon. But he didn't feel that this was a good argument to be sumach upon, because he said that this din of the Sheish Maitasa that he's talking about is like in connection with a chazaka that is a chazaka ledina, of the halakhic status of something. The halakhic status that you're able to be mafish truma on something. The halakhic status that a get is able to be given. The halakhic status that, this is a creative one, that a woman is becheskas omedes l'nisuin, kaima. Then in the case of the Sheif Shmaitis of our sugya, but the woman who's bevei sabia, that it wasn't a mekatos, because your star woman is, this is a ches kazaka ledina, that she's becheskas muteris, that she's omedes lehinase, and that she's not disqualified based on mumen. So since you have, but with respect to all of these chazakas, a chazaka ledina, so that you can rely upon. But a stam chazaka, when do we have, or even a chazaka you put down an eruv, that the eruv is going to still be the bein hashmashos? That's a chazaka ledina. But if you have a chazaka of mitzius, so where do you find such a thing that you assume that if there are no halakhic ramifications, which there certainly, we didn't start out with halakhic ramifications, that it should matter whether a man be on the 104th floor, or whether he be on the 44th floor, whether he be in this building, whether he be in the other building. Since when do we assume that a person remains in the same place every single second? It says in Zechariah, right, v'nasata d'cham alchem ben omdim ma'ela. People move around. That is a general rule. It's just as much of a chazaka that a person walks from place to place as there is that a person stays, remains, you know, in the same location.
But
so he says, yes? Different
points, meaning one, I thought what you're saying was that we just don't have any precedent for just sort of freezing a mitzias, which isn't, I guess, a kind of a goof. But other than, I guess, chazaka goof, but we just don't have, you know, mitzias that we freeze moments in time and just say that it can, and then you're saying we have actual reason to believe, even if we did that, but we don't actually have a good reason to do that, to assume that here. And let's say we didn't assume that people walk around.
Right.
I thought the argument was, even if we don't assume people walk around, even if it's true that people don't generally walk around, but we just don't have a halachic ability to say, well, he's becheskas being in that room.
That's essentially what he's saying. He's not becheskas of being, you know, in any particular
location. It's not that we
know
people walk around. Even if we didn't know people walk around. There's just no
ability. In Achinami, I'm just building to it. He doesn't quote the pasuk in Zechariah, but he says that therefore he doesn't think that this has any, you know, halakhic significance. And he brings a raya from a separate ptos in Siman Reish Mem Aleph Sifuk Katan Ches, where the ptos has this yisod about kiyum tanoim. If a person gives a matana to somebody and he says, "I'm going to give you this matana," I'll deny that you do something, that you dance a jig, then the burden of evidence is on the person who needed to be mekayim the tenai, that he really danced the jig in order to get the matana in the end. And this would apply to a get al tenai as well. Or as opposed to if a person made a tenai that he's going to give this matana to a person if that person doesn't drink wine. So then the burden is not upon the person to prove that he didn't drink wine, it's upon the one who made the tenai, if he doesn't want to give the matana at the end, to prove that the person didn't drink any wine. And the Ksos asks that, why is that? If it's a question of how likely it is that the person did something and didn't do something, it can come in the opposite direction. They're more likely, if they know that $1 million is on the line, it could be presumed that they probably danced the jig. You know, it takes 2 seconds to dance a little jig. Therefore, you know, that's much easier. While on the other hand, if the condition was that they go, you know, say 3 weeks without drinking wine, so most people would die if they had to go, you know, without drinking wine. Use a lashon like that. So therefore, the Ksos postulates an answer that it's not a question of the difficulty of the matter. It's a question of is there that if a maisa hasn't been done, the chazaka is that the maisa does not get done unless it's proven that the maisa was done. And therefore, the person who stands to benefit from the maisa has to prove that the maisa from the maisa being done has to prove that the maisa actually got done. But he says, oh, but the ksos is clearly talking about when the maisa are going to have ramifications ladina, because a tanai was made, and we have to be done on whether there's a kiyama tanai, whether there isn't a kiyama tanai. So Rav Zalman HaChaim Goldberg, in his answer to Rabbi Levine, said, Adarabba, I read from the Ksos exactly the opposite conclusion, that there's no, you know, the Cheskos Tuma, Tara, Tebo, Kulin, that with Truma, that we're talking about in connection to the person dancing a jig. This is saying that because of the fact that in general, when we look at people, we don't assume that a maisa was done to change the status quo unless it's proven otherwise. That's why a raya would have to be made, but otherwise we assume the status quo. And if anything, he felt that this proves his that this proves his position. Then he brought Akasha on himself and on the whole this whole idea from the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin brings a raya that we go the Holech Acharov with respect to from a paraduma. Says in the fact that we look at a paraduma and we use the paraduma to be the paraduma, even though we don't know, and we burn it, so nobody's ever going to check to see if it was a trefa, and we work with the assumption that it wasn't a trefa, that shows that we're following Rov Behemos, and the Gemara seems to indicate that's a decent raya. So he says, but according to what we're saying, the whole notion of Hochin Akar Rov that wouldn't even be implicated in this particular case because there was never a reyusa. It was never used. I never had a moment in time in which I looked at it and said, oh, there's a Maka Bebeis HaKosos, in which there was, you know, some sort of a possibility of trefus. So therefore, why are you bringing a raya from here? So he answers. He says, no, if not for the fact that we would go, that we know that there's a halakha, and that you go basaro, so then, by definition, even if I don't know anything, since there's a mute of behemoths that are trefos, it would be as if a reyusa had been established, because I need the robe to teach me that miut kamandalei sadami, that it's as if the miut doesn't exist altogether, but until I have it in a robe, it's there and it's out there and I have an automatic reyusa. So this is similar to the mahalach that Elchanan Wasserman has with respect to the sugya of Mamzer Lo Yedia Lo Chai in Yevamos, because over there he asks the question, or actually he brings the kasha of the Shara Melech from the Gemara in Chulin, from the seventh part of the Gemara, that brings the raya from Maki Oviv, that why is it that a person who strikes his father is going to be chayev? Maybe it's not his father. Rather, this proves that we go bust a rove. So the question is, what's the kasha? We know that it's his father because if he had been a mamzer, there's a principle that mamzer de lo yedia lo chai. So the Chon Wasserman answers the question by saying, well, we have a general principle which is established by the Maharit. This is Sheish Mait Sa'alf. That Sopek Mamzer is Mutter Betoris Vadai. Once he's Mutter Betoris Vadai, so he's not really considered to be a Mamzer anymore. But this is a similar principle, he says, to the principle of Bittul Barov, that the idea is that there's Xeris Akasov, that the Miut is Nepach Leheter. However, this is only, as the Yushami explains, Perek Beis De Orla, Yushami is quoted by the Rash in Perek Beis De Orla, that this is only after Yediyas HaTarubis. This is only after Nodat Tarubis. However, we don't have the Bittul Kodem to the moment which there's a Yediyas HaTarubis. So before there's a Yediyas HaTarubis, I have a problem. So he says that since this is the case, so it's similar with respect to a Sapek Mamzer. Sapek Mamzer is only going to be a Heter Gamor La'achar Yedias HaTarubis. However, this is only once we establish the principle of hochin acharov, if we're not hochin acharov, he says, then in any situation where I look at a person, even if there isn't a leidas hasafik, and I don't have my normal situation of, oh, this is a safik mamzer because it's a leidas hasafik, so there's always going to be a leidas hasafik because there's always a reyusa with respect to everybody, since I don't have a principle of rov. So if there's always going to be a reyusa with respect to everybody, so everybody is considered to be a safik mamzer. Since everybody is considered to be a safik mamzer before I know the din of rov, so therefore everybody's going to be alive, even if they're going to be a mamzer. And therefore, that's why the Gemara is able to ask the Kasha, Vidilma Lababifu, because since everybody, if I didn't have a dinner robe, so everybody would be Suffolk Mamzer is Mutter Minotaur, so everybody would be alive, and therefore it's possible that the person could still be alive and be Maket Esaviv, even though he's a Mamzer. It's only after I learned the dinner robe that I can actually apply this principle of Mamzer Lo Yedia Lo Chai. So it's a similar idea that. I'm sorry? Yeah. It's a good question, I guess maybe it depends, you know, on how small a meal it is. You know, here, you know, it's mamish and gornish. I don't have a yediyah sasapik at all, so maybe everybody would be masking in such a case. You know, right? Yutah Meir is not Choshesh with respect to... Right, that's what I thought. I thought even Rabbi Meir would agree in this type, exactly. Even Rabbi Meir would agree. A muted, exactly. That if it was so small... What? So therefore, it could apply even to, according to Rabbi Meir, that once I know, that once I have a dinner rope, and I have no leidas hasafik whatsoever, so then a person who has no leidas hasafik, he just comes from a nice family, the mother was never suspected of anything, so he doesn't have a din of safik mamzer. Once he doesn't have a din of safik mamzer, so then I'm going to apply the principle of mamzer lo yedia lo chai. And then you want to live. He gives another teretz afterwards, but that's sort of the main thrust of that particular piece. So I was thinking that that's along the lines of what Zalman Nechemiah says with respect to chulin. There were other challenges that were brought. Sendrovic from Milwaukee wrote a separate tshuva to Rav Zalman Nechemiah based on his derivation from the Shev Shmaitasa, and he argued that it appears from the Ein Yitzchak that he doesn't hold like this svar, because he says that there was a case of somebody who had been in a boat and he was last seen on the bed of his boat. And then the boat was overtaken by water. So he said, even though, and it fell into Mayim She'en Lahem Sof. So he argued that even though normally we say that when we have Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, we're not Matir, it's Aisha. In this case, it's different, because normally what happens with Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, the person falls into the water. But here, the water went into the boat, and it could be assumed that the person remained in his bed because he had been in his bed beforehand. So he says, based on the combination, number one, Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, and number two, there could be presumed that the person didn't leave his bed. Therefore, we know that he must have been, you know, there would have been no way to escape if the water drowned him while he was in his bed. So because he wouldn't have been, you know, out there swimming away in the sea. He would have been just completely submerged while the boat was still above water, just, you know, submerged by all the water inside. So he says that if you could have just relied on the fact that he's presumed to have stayed in his bed, then why do you need to throw in Mayim She'en Lahem Sof as well? So the fact that Yisrael Chukanin, so a need to throw in, and I'm so make on a combination of these stavim, so that shows that therefore we don't rely upon this alone. I don't know, it could be that it's all really one side, but in the end, Rizam Nechemiah said, Lemaise, even though he wrote this as an argument, and he thinks that this is a reasonable argument, nobody should make or break the Heter Aguna based on this argument, since it turned out that there was DNA, that DNA identification of the husband who was missing anyway. So he said, Kedai that to rely upon. I'm really relying mostly on that in the final analysis, and therefore you can not worry so much about your various kashas. But in fact, if you're not overwhelmed by these various kashas and you prefer his teirutzim, so this is a potential mahalach to utilize in aguna situations. Now, the inyan, they also inyan. So the Rashba, in his tshuva on in Chulin Daf Yud Aleph, spoke about the Gvinos, a case of Gvinos where he applies a similar principle that we don't assume that unless there was a reusa that we're going to bring back a reusa lemafreya. What was the case of the Gvinos? He calls them a beinu shimsha. The following case that they made lots of Gvinos from a particular behema. And then, at the time that they shepherd the baby, they discovered, lo and behold, the animals are treif. So do we say, I'm going to go back in time and treif up all of the gavinos and kalim that had been made prior to the shlita of the behema, or do we assume that no, the animal only now became a treif? So he says that we assume that unless there was some sort of a problem that we knew about, if there was no leidus asafik that we had to combat, as it says, like in this sugya, then the same would be true that that we assume that until the last possible moment the animal was becheskas kashrus, and therefore we would not possible the gvinos lemafreya, and any paskins this way, and this leads to an interesting machlokis between the Shach and the Taz, the first simon of Yoredeah. The focus there is about, the Ramah quotes the Din of the Aguda. The Din of the Aguda is like this, that if there was a Shochet who was shechting for a while, and a bunch of behemoths that the Shochet shechted, and now we ask the Shochet the Aleph base of Shchita, turns out he doesn't know the Aleph base of Shchita, had absolutely no idea what he was doing. So the Aguda says, well, it's true, Rova Mitzvah Eitzel Shkita Mumkanehim, but not this guy. So therefore he's Yosim in a row, he's squarely in the mute, and therefore all the behemoths are going to be treifus. However, if the fellow had a Kabbalah at one point in time, and we know based on the Kabbalah, we presume, based on the Kabbalah, it was a good smicha, it met the standards of the RCA smicha committee, the fellow, you know, had a bona fide Kabbalah, and now we test him, and it turns out that Imamish doesn't know anything, we say, this is the moment that he only forgot everything right now, but the chazakah that he had beforehand remains a good chazakah, and we're not going to passel him until the last possible moment. So that's what the Shach rules. And the Taz says, nothing doing. The Taz says that we see that the fellow doesn't know anything, and therefore we have to pass all of the shchitos that he did beforehand. And there's a whole diun because the Gemara, in the beginning of Nida, talks about the case of the mikvah shemadav nimsa chaser. I have a mikvah that I measure. It turns out that it's chaser. So what's the halacha? The halacha is that if somebody was tamei and he toppled in that mikvah, that hamei tamei al cheskaso. Why hamei tamei al cheskaso? Because I have talked to the reusa. That number one, he was the cheskas tamei before he went to the mikvah, and harei chaso lefanecha. And we see the mikvah is chaser. So he says so too over here that the behema was becheskas asura, and harei amaretz lefanecha. We have a shochet who doesn't know what he's doing in front of her. So part of this has to do with to what degree you can compare or contrast this case with the halacha of Chista. So halacha with daf chulin daf yud, machlokes of hunin of Chista. Fellow is shochet and then he's shover atzamos afterwards. Now it turns out that the sakin is peduma. Do I pass all the behemoths that he shafted beforehand? Rav Huna says yes. Rav Chista says no. Tosfos asks on Rav Chista, why is this case any different from the case of mikvah shemadu benimtza chaser? Here as well, I have a behema becheska sosuva and I have a nimtza pogum. So why should I not be machmir in this case as well? And Tosfos gives three different terutzim. Tosa says, well, in this case, it's possible that it just became pogum at the last possible moment. On the case of mikvah is chaser ve'osai, that it gets depleted gradually over time. Number two, then in shchita, it's more mistaber because of the fact that he was probably nifgam mafrakis, you know, you can say, and certainly he's breaking, you know, at some afterwards. And thirdly, in the Sakin, I have a case of Sveik Sveika, that Shema, it became Pagum Be'etzim, and Shema Lo Shachad Keneged HaPegima, even if it was Pagum, maybe he didn't check the Keneged HaPegima. So the Taz says that in this case, the fellow who doesn't know anything, so number one, chances are he didn't forget everything overnight. He forgot everything, you know, gradually over time. So therefore, this is considered to be Chassid Rasai. And number two, I have no reason to assume that, you know, it only went bad the last moment. And number three, I don't really have a Sveik Sveika. So the Shach says that, first of all, it's not quite the case, the same as the case of the Mikvah, because over here, I also have the robe, Hamatsuyan, that, you know, he assumes doesn't go away altogether, but he also says, I have a Sveik Sveika. I have a Sveik that maybe he knew, maybe he didn't know when he did the Shechita, and a Sveik that even if he didn't know anything, even a, you know, a broken clock, you know, tells the right time, you know, once a day or twice, so therefore, you know, maybe by some miracle, he did a Shechita Ksheira anyway, despite the fact that that he didn't know anything. And this is a major machlokas, but the question is how to carry it over to other items. So the Shach mentions in passing, I don't think the Taz addresses this mefurish, others address this, but the Shach addresses the case of Shochet Shehemir. I have a Shochet that goes bad. He apostatizes. I have a Shochet who apostatizes, so do I say, well, if he was Hamer now, then he was no good a long time ago. So he brings a raya from this idea, from the idea of the Gvinas, the Rashba, and so forth, that we don't go backwards. We don't assume that a person who went bad now was bad beforehand. You know, others bring, you know, argue, well, maybe we should say that Hirshia Be'asai, that a person becomes a Rasha, gradually over time, and therefore if he's a Rasha today, he must have been a Rasha a long time ago. So the Ksos, in discussing this inyan of this machlokis that is brought between the Gaonai Basrai that have this the Shita that one should be machmir in the case of somebody who was Hamir. The person who was Hamir, you have to assume that they were a problem even beforehand. And the Orchas Chaim is Mako. So the Ksos, Shev Shmaitasa, quotes this. This is in Shmaitasa Gimel, Perek Dalet. And he says something very interesting along the same lines of what we've been discussing, that gets lost a little bit in the translation whenever the sugya is discussed. It's a major sugya that gets discussed halacha l'maaseh, because sometimes you find a situation, for example, usually you want somebody to be puzzled. Usually it works out that the more a person is puzzled, the better off you are. Not in shuffling animals, that's bad news. But when does it come up, Ladina? Usually in like Mamzera's cases where a woman remarries and she didn't get a gift from the first husband, now she has children from the second marriage, and there's a question whether the first marriage was valid, and you find that one of the Eidim at the first wedding is a Machal Shabbos. But you don't know if he was a Machal Shabbos 10 years ago or 20 years ago when the marriage was performed. So do you say if he was a Machal Shabbos now, he must have been a Machal Shabbos before? So this is, you know, to a certain extent, based upon this inyan. The Shach assumes that somebody's Hamir, so therefore I'm not going to pass them the Mafreya Tfua Shur. Disagrees and says that no, we say that the person gradually became a Rasha, and therefore I have to assume that he was a Pasul the Mafreya.
I mean, the Gemara is, we always say that the Pasul Mishash Idola.
So the Sheish Meister first of all quotes from the idea of Eid Zomim. It says, Eid Zomim, what's the halakha with respect to Eid Zomim? That I have Eidim who come along and I say that this Eid is puzzle, because at the time of Edus, Imanu Yisim, right? The Edim were with us. So from what moment in time are the Edim apostle? Are they apostle from the moment in which you render the Edus about them? Or are they apostle Mishas Hazoma?
Mishas Shavera, Shehidu.
Mishas Hazoma. So that's
from the time of the Avera.
Abaye says, Edom Mafreya. So Sheish Maitis says, yeah, that's nice. He's apostle Mafreya. He's not apostle from his moment of his bar mitzvah. He's apostle from the time in which he did the Maisa Hazoma, the Maisa, the Agadis Edus, that turns out to have been an Edus Sheker Mitam Hazoma. So that's when he's apostle. But we don't say he's apostle beforehand. So therefore he says, so we see from here that we're not matzik beforehand. He brings a raya from there. So he says, I don't need to even bring a raya from there. So says the following very important. So he says, l'chein ikvadach milsa, de'ein matzikin l'mafreya, ela kamo b'mikvah shenimdad v'nim tzachase. When is it that we go on the mafreya? Like a case of a mikvah, dinistapaknu, emasai nasach yizoran ezeim akshavo kodim. We don't know when the chisaron happened. Listen carefully. I know that the mikveh is chaser right now. It's not a maise that I saw that like a person, you know, gets up and he bows down to another religion. We know the maise happened now. I know there's a problem with mikveh. I don't know when that problem arose. The chemisakin shinim a problem. Or I find the sakin which is pogrom. Nobody's being made. I saw when it became pogrom. I have a much easier shaila if I saw when it became pogrom. What's the problem? I don't know. But don't know that. Amos nase pagamaze shematzano akshav. I don't know when that pagima took place. The chem shochet shenimtsa reik mikol, or a shochet that it turns out he doesn't know anything. And you have a legitimate machlokas there between the shach and the taz that I don't know at what moment he stopped knowing anything. Okay. Above a shochet shehimir ve'asa aveira lefanenu. But what's the case of a hamer? Or in the cases that the poskim are done upon, they are done upon a case of a machal shabbos b'frahesya. What does that mean? Generally speaking, it means I have eidim who come to me and they say, I know right now that this guy is a machal shabbos. If the eidim was saying, I know that 10 years ago the guy was a machal shabbos and the wedding took place 10 years ago, so then I don't have anything to worry about. But if they say, right now, I saw the person was Michal Shabbos, that's the Maiseh that they're being made upon. If they told me, I saw the person was Michal Shabbos, I don't remember when it was, so then we can, you know, analogize to this situation. But we're being made at a particular moment in time. Zeh lav shmei sofek. This is not considered to be a sofek because the Maiseh that we're being done upon, we know about. We're just speculating about whether it ever happened before, right? Our whole sopek is with respect to, since I know that the guy is doing averus now, do I assume that the guy did averus beforehand? And therefore, we would say that since every single person has a cheskas kashrus, assuming every single person has a cheskas kashrus, therefore, it's only at this moment in time that the person lost their cheskas kashrus. That explains, of course, the shita of the aguda. The shita of the aguda, we know from the fact that this fellow had a kabbalah, the guy had a bona fide cheskas kashrus, so therefore we understand that cheskas kashrus was messed up at this point in time. You can argue that if somebody never had a cheskas kashrus for a particular inyan, so therefore it's megala now that the person doesn't know anything and he didn't have a kabbalah, that the person never had a cheskas kashrus to begin with. But if a person starts off with a cheskas kashrus, so that's not something that would be ruined. So what some of the poskim say, and this is a long discussion in the Yibia Omer, Rabbi Yosef was very bold in finding smos to be matir sopik mamzerim. So in a couple of tshuvas, he deals with this whole inyan in Yibia Omer, chelik ches, Eben Ezer, Simon Hay. And in the other case, I have on the Mara Mekomos, Chelik Yud, Simon Zion, he deals with this issue. And he quotes certain poskim who say that maybe it really depends on, you know, the person. That if you're dealing with a person who mamish had a cheskas kashrus, and then you mami the cheskas kashrus until the time of the aveira. If you're dealing with a person who never had a cheskas kashrus, so then you can say it's megala, and the fact that the person's doing aveiras right now, that the person never had a cheskas kashrus. In fact, the Rashba has a tshuva in which the Rashba talks about a shochet who is found to have committed averus, and the Rashba indicates that you have to be makshu the kalim because you assume that even beforehand the person was no good, and and this tshuva of the Rashba is quoted by, just pull it out, by the Maharshdam Chelik Yoredeya Simon Samech Samech Aleph, and he says that in a case where it turns out that there was a shochet ubodek, and there was that everybody kind of was there were always rumors and suspicions about him, but they can never really prove anything about him. But then it turned out that there were a few occasions in which Yatsasa Trefa Mitachas Yado, so he paskins that on this basis he thinks that you should say that Hochiach Sofo Al Tfilaso, that the kalim that were used for previous animals that he shechted, the animals aren't around anymore, that you have to kasher the kalim. And this Marashdam is cited by Rav Avadya Yosef in Tshuva about a woman who was married, and it turned out one of the Eidim was Michal Shabbos, that is certainly in a case where the aid came from a community where there was no automatic cheskas kashrus with respect to different individuals, that you can go back in time and say that the person was never kosher altogether. I had to invoke this Meshita on one occasion. We had a case involving a woman who had remarried after she had an Orthodox marriage, and she didn't receive a get from her first husband. Now she had a child. The child was already 14, 15 years old, went to yeshiva schools, and the child became, I don't know, was the NCSY or otherwise, but was becoming frum, and the mother was becoming frum, Balas Tshuva with him, and she realized there might be a problem with the future status of this child. Well, it turned out, we did some research, this rabbi was in a community where most of the people were Mechal Shabbos, so when he was Mesadar Kiddushin, he was pretty much the only Shomer Shabbos, but there was a chazen there. The chazen was a fellow who was a Baal Tshuva himself, he didn't do everything 100% perfectly, not in terms of Shmiras Mitzvos. There were other tainos against this individual. We couldn't find any reyusa with respect to Shmiras Mitzvos at the time of the chasana, but afterwards he became a porigol, at least according to the best of our research. It seemed that he became a porigol. We couldn't really find an easy solution to this problem, because it appeared that there were two kosher eidim who were present at the time of the chuppah, and how could you passel a kiddushin on that basis? On the other hand, since now he was a porigol, I saw an advertisement this fellow had. I looked on the internet at the time, early days of the internet, and I found he was advertising that he was performing conversions. And he said, if you pay me $15,000 and you fly to this location, I have access to a mikvah nearby, and I'll convert you on the spot, no questions asked. So, you know, he didn't, you know, have a, didn't seem he was becheskes kashrus anymore. So one of the arguments that I presented I was thinking that this could be a possible argument, but I didn't feel comfortable relying upon it myself. And then one night I went to sleep, and while I was sleeping, the image of Rav Avadya Yosef appeared to me in my dream and said, just write up all your time in Yimukim and send it to me and I'll take care of it. So I wrote up, and I think he said it in Hebrew. So I wrote it up, and I sent the Shaila to Rav Avadya Yosef his grandson, I think Rav Ezra Bar Shalom, wrote a tshuva, which... the end of the tshuva has a little writing here by Rav Avadya Yosef himself, in which he writes that Yanti Bipsaktino Shil Machasni Agon Revezo Basholom Chavi Bez the God Yerushalayim Ba'af Yaditi Koni Mo Yafed Don Yafed Hora Bekoach De Hetera Lahatir Es Habein Lavo Bikal Hashem and he mitzvah Bipsaktino V'yagdil Torah V'yadir. And in the tshuva, he quoted this particular Marsham that relies upon this svara that you can sometimes go back in time even to apostle somebody, but see about the timing. Now, of course, Rabbi Yosef, when he was somek on this, was never somek on it alone, but he said, at least midei sopek, lo yatzanu, that it's possible to, you know, at least have a sopek with respect to this particular issue. And therefore, since it's possible to have a sopek with respect to this issue, you can build in other spekos. So he built in the sopek of Shem and Esapa Lugoi, which Shah's Dan and Mam said altogether. It happens that in that case, we were able to determine that at one point in time, between her first marriage and her second marriage, Shitaka was Mizana with a goy. So it wasn't such a far-fetched svara in that particular case. And therefore, there were multiple spekos. There's room to be mako with respect to a mamzer. It was interesting, though.
What was the psul that we're retrojecting backwards? Is based on what?
Oh, we actually called. We actually did further research with this fellow, yeah. And he was maskev. He's no longer orthodox. He's no longer shomer mitzvahs.
Is it in the mitzvahs of Russia?
It's true, but there was other evidence that we were able to collect that the fellow was poor gol and that was not was no longer kosher. The question was whether he really ever mitchiloso had a cheskas kashrus, and he wasn't. This was not somebody who started out for him. Not to cast aspersions on a certain person who becomes more observant, but there was ama lismoch based on this type of this type of consideration. Now, the only thing is that the Sheish Vaitasa draws a very important distinction. And the psak is fine. The psak is issued. The son is mutzal l'kahal. Wonderful. But for the sake of, Pupula Shel Torah, much of the discussion often revolves around the Shita of the Rivash. Shita of the Rivash is quoted by the Ramah in Choshen Mishpat, Simulam Adalet, Sifchav Gimel. The Rivash says, if I have Edim who testify about somebody, it's the other case, they testify about somebody, this person was over in Aveira. It was an Aveira that's going to make them possible. Certainly Mishas Aveira, not from Bar Mitzvah, but Mishas Aveira, they're going to be possible. An Aveira, Daraisa, for which they're Shiesh Bomalkus, it'll be an Aveira for which they're going to be possible from that moment in time. So Yivash says that we're Maksik, a person, Mekashruso, until the last possible moment in which we know that the Aveira was committed. That's the argument of the Yivash. And others argue on the Yivash. They say that we know that he's a apostle lefanecha. Whatever adios he rendered, the person was, we had a cheskas mamon, that is going to be removed as a result of his adios. So we should say that it's like a case of mikvah shechaser lefanecha, and therefore we should be machmir. And there are different arguments. No, maybe this is different because Hashir v'asai. Maybe it's similar to mikvah because the person becomes a rasha gradually, and therefore we should be machmir. Or maybe we should be mekel because a person can become a rasha at the last possible moment. So these are some of the diunim that go back and forth. There are different justifications given of the nesivos. The psos in Simen Lamed Daled is tolet on how you understand the sugya and kiddushin daf samat vod machlokes Rabbi Yekiva and Rabbi Tarfon with respect to mikvah nimdad v'nimtza chaser, where Rabbi Tarfon is makshir, Rabbi Yekiva is posel, Rabbi Yekiva is posel because of the fact that he says it's not analogous to a Kohen ben Grusha ben Chalutza, but it's analogous to a Kohen ba Mum, Kohen ba ben Grusha ben Chalutza. We don't pasul lemafreya the avoda that he performed, and he says that's because of psulo b'shnayim, and this is a case as well that in order to pasul somebody, it is a psulo b'shnayim, and therefore we shouldn't pasul lemafreya. But Tosfos says that case of Begusha Ben Chalutza is different, because for case of Begusha Ben Chalutza, his avoda is kosher even if I know Bebada that is a Begusha Ben Chalutza, therefore I can't learn from there. So says if you hold like Tosfos, I don't have a raya from there. And the Nesiva says this case is entirely different, because we're not being done about a particular maaseh, like a maaseh tefillah, whether there was 40 sa'ah in the mikvah or there weren't 40 sa'ah in the mikvah. I'm being done, you know, whether a particular action that was performed in Mamanus, or let's say the A testified about Mamanus, I'm being done whether that transaction took place or not, and that's independent of whether the person is a Rasha or isn't a Rasha, and therefore there's more room to be Mekel, because his Cheskas Rishus is, in this case, not a Cheskas Aguf, it's a Chazaka de Mibareris. But if that would be the case, if it would be something with his Cheskas Aguf, or Cheskas Kashrus was at issue, like he was an Eighth Kiddushin, so then it wouldn't be good, but others point out that the Rivash explicitly stated his din, where it was a question of the kashrus of somebody in the context of being an eighth kiddushin. And others argue, the Chachmas Shlomo brings this, and the Chachmas Shlomo brings that here we're talking about a person's cheskas kashrus. So a person's cheskas kashrus is a limta. A person's cheskas kashrus is, you know, stronger than even a cheskas aguf. It's the strongest possible chazaka, and therefore that's not something that you know you would possible until the last possible moment. And how you paskin, you know, depends on which of you the shitos you would accept, and which of the shitos you don't accept. And the Rivash is often utilized as kind of like a central shita in making the assessment as to whether I'm going to passel somebody the mafreya or not passel somebody the mafreya. And if you don't hold like the Rivash, so then the assumption is, so then I'm going to passel somebody the mafreya because of the fact that I don't have a good argument to say that the maaseh rishus occurred at the last possible moment. Maybe it occurred, you know, at a much earlier point in time. So the ha'ara that I want to make is that, generally speaking, when these cases arise, it's not along the lines of the Rivash. Okay, I had a case recently along the lines of the Rivash, this conversation with Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef in Eretz Yisrael, the question of a person who is found doing some naughty behavior, very bad behavior, and he said that in addition to whatever other considerations might come into play, so you could presumably rely upon the Rivash, that even if it was known that a person was doing very bad things, I hope you don't mind if I keep it at that, you don't have to assume that the person was doing it forever. You can, until you have proof that they were doing it at a particular point in time, you don't have to assume that they were doing it at a previous point in time. Sometimes that svar is helpful, sometimes that svar isn't helpful. However, what the Psos is telling us is that most of the cases where, for example, I've made them come along and they say, I see somebody who's a Mechalel Shabbos, I see somebody who's doing a Maaseh, and I can tell you exactly when I saw this. The person's a Rosh, so says this has nothing to do with the Rivash. This is a totally separate consideration. Rivash is, I don't know when the Maaseh Psul took place, and it's a question as to whether I push it to the last possible moment, or whether I say that if I don't know, so therefore I have to assume it happened at the earliest possible point in time. However, here, I know what happened. The topic is, do I say that just like this happened, so something, that just like the person was over on this Aveira, so they were over on other Aveiras, or just like the person was over on this Aveira today, they must have been over on this Aveira 10 years ago. So here he says since there was no Reusa, there was no Leidus HaSopik up until this point in time, so therefore this Lav Shmei Sopik, because I don't have any latest asafik with respect to any previous Maisa Rasha. So it's much more difficult to be makel on that basis. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but it's important to bear in mind this particular distinction as well. Okay, we'll stop here.